I keep thinking about the same thing, about how Vlad came into baseball and you compared him to Zion. And how Zion, I will say that the start to his NBA career was pretty disappointing. He was hurt. He was not in great shape. He had some stuff. Like, they get hit with the pandemic, but they had to monitor his minutes in about the weirdest way that you'll ever see a first overall pick, where they throw him out on the court and he plays 4 minutes and then he comes off and you don't know when you're going to see him again. And he was laboring up and down the floor. Even early this season, I remember thinking, dude, Zion, you're going to have to figure out this body at some point. The Vlad Zion comparison that you made could not have been more appropriate. Both guys really starting to find themselves, both guys in better shape, both guys starting to dominate their sport, both guys potentially the faces of their sport in the next couple of years. ESPN, and I know that we put a lot of stock into what they do south of the border when it comes to Canadian coverage, but they tweeted out the Vlad bomb, and I keep thinking the same thing. How are we not going to have it so that in 3 years, baseball is hoping that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is the face of baseball, much the same way that the NBA is hoping Zion is the face of the NBA?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think he's in the conversation, and I know I've said this to you and Ben when he's been with you. You know, it's like Acuna, Tatis, Soto. Vlad's supposed to be the fourth Beatle, right? He's in that group. So I don't know if he's above. I'm not going to put him above those guys. All three of those guys add other value defensively and in certain other ways that Vlad doesn't. But coming up through the minors, if you were ranking them just offensively, like, Vlad was number one, right? And maybe he will be, maybe he won't be. I've done a couple Atlanta games this year, and I've watched a bunch of Atlanta games, and I got to tell you, Ronald Acuna Jr. is a force of nature. I mean, he is absolutely off the charts, ridiculously good, and I'd be shocked if he doesn't win 2-3 MVPs by the time it's all said and done. The good news, I guess, is Acuna, from an MVP perspective, not to get too far down the crazy street here, but Acuna and Tatis and Soto are all in the other league. They're going to be competing with each other forever for all of these awards. For now, Vladdy's obviously the only one in the American League. But I didn't expect this big of a jump. And you know, it is 13 games, and let's see what happens. But it's not just the result. It's how he's controlling the at-bats. It's the pitches he's taking, the pitches he's fouling off, the times he appears to be cutting down his swing a little bit and hitting the ball the other way and taking what they give him. And the times, of course, he's wailing away on a pitch like he did last night when he hit it 456 feet. And if I'm him, I am beyond excited. And this only makes me want to work harder, because he worked incredibly hard, obviously, from last July to this March. And he did a lot of good things. But there's probably more he can do, right, in another offseason. I mean, he can still get his body better, and he can still work more at first base, and et cetera, et cetera. So it's tremendously exciting. And, you know, where would the Blue Jays be right now without the start that he's had? Because they, you know they've got some issues going on right now. But I'll tell you, and I don't know if you were watching, they're down 7-0, and then you blink, and it's the ninth inning, and he's the go-ahead run at the plate with two outs in the ninth. That was pretty good April 14th or 15th drama in Kansas City. That was pretty good for 2 weeks into the season. Didn't turn out as we would all like, but it was still a lot of fun to watch.
How dare you question whether I was watching? I watch every game. And
well, what if the Raptors are on or the Leafs are on?
No, the Leafs were on, but it was actually – I love when they do this, where they play one game at 7 and one game at 8. Oh, it's just nothing is sweeter than that combination for myself anyways. Yeah. For you, you're probably like, start the Blue Jays at 7, please. I love that 8 o'clock start time. And I don't mind late sports. It's the best. I stay up, actually, and that's usually my time where I get to surf around and watch other leagues, other games, other players. It's the me time. But, yeah, the only way you can get Vlad Jr. out is if you expand the strike zone by, what, a foot and a half, which is what that one strike call was. And so, yeah. I was apoplectic last night about it, because they robbed us of that drama yet again with poor umpiring. And I don't know what the accountability is for that, but it's very, very frustrating to see, especially now that we have this technology where fans can see basically conclusively how bad of a call that was. But, no, dude, Vlad, you're right. It's not just that he is getting these hits or these walks, all of the process looks so good. And the stuff you mentioned about being encouraged, I can't remember who I was speaking about this with. I think it was maybe Ben Nicholson-Smith or Arden earlier in the week, how the best part of this is how stark the contrast is between what Vlad was when he didn't work out versus what he has done when he's dedicated himself to the game this way. Because I'm sure not all of it is the body transformation stuff, right? Some of it is just maturing and coming into your own and feeling confident and feeling good coming into the season and being hot to start. But just the fact that these two things have coincided with one another, I just think he's never going to be able to separate them. And so for someone who, mm-hmm. yeah, had so much talent, and you've seen this with people, whether it's school, right? Everybody knows that kid at school who doesn't do their homework but just shows up for the test and bangs out A pluses, you know, because they just have that ability. Vlad was that guy. But for him now to have done the homework and have it coincide with getting into Harvard, whatever it, however, I'm going to try to make this kind of loose analogy work. I just think it's going to last forever, and it's going to add longevity to his career. And dare I say, when do they? You think they give him maybe a little sneaky quick look at third base, because I don't think Biggio can play there.
Right. So I knew this was going to come up. So I've been thinking about this a lot last night. Tabby and I, I mean, it's a big story, right? And Tabby and I talked about it on air last night, and I thought about it on the drive home. So I think in a perfect world, which it never is and never will be, if they could have found a guy to play third base who they loved and the price was right, I think they would have preferred that guy and leave Biggio at second. But they wanted an impact guy. Marcus Semien was the guy they wanted. I loved the signing at the time. I think it was a great signing. I think he's really going to help. But it forced Biggio to move to a different position. I don't think there's any question. And like I know I said it before the season started, he played 10 games at third base last year. He just didn't look as comfortable to me at third as he did at second. He looked a little uncomfortable with the throw. Now, last night, none of the issues had to do with throwing. But I think they got themselves in a position where they wanted one more impact player. Semien was the guy. He was okay with playing second. So they said to Biggio, can you move to third? And because Biggio is an all-world guy and has played a ton of different positions, he said, sure. And he showed up early, and he took ground balls, and he's there every morning in the spring, et cetera, et cetera. We all know that. It's not going great. There have been some games where it's gone fine, and you know, then last night was obviously a different situation. I don't know what they're going to do here. Like, you know, option A is they leave him there, and they hope he figures it out. Option B is, do you go to Marcus Semien and say, we know what we promised you, Marcus, but would you flip with Biggio? And that's a tough spot for Semien. Semien made a career choice based on a promise. That's a tough spot to put him in. Option C, like you said, do you flip Vladdy over there a little bit? Not 6 days a week or anything, but you flip him over there a little bit. Then Rowdy can play first. Then one of the outfielders can DH. And then Biggio looks like maybe a super utility guy. I don't know. I don't know if they want to flip Vladdy over there, JD, because he's doing so well at first. You know what I mean? They're like, this is not an easy solution. And anybody on Twitter who just says, just do this and everything's fine, it's not going to work that way. You know, Joe Panic might play a little bit more. Santiago Espinal might come up. I don't know. But I'm trying, you know, I don't want to overreact to one game as rough as it was for Cabin. Let's see if he's physically okay, first of all, with the right hand and all that. But I don't know what the answer to this is. And obviously they're talking about it. You can't ignore it. It's got to be better than it's been. And I feel badly for Biggio. I mean, they took a guy who's an average defender, whose strength is his versatility, and they put him somewhere, they asked him to go somewhere where he's not as comfortable. And because he's the guy he is, he said, sure. And now they're in a bit of a situation. But again, maybe in 2 weeks he's a lot better than he's been. I don't know. But I do imagine they're having some conversations about this internally.
Can I be the guy on Twitter?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So
you are the guy on Twitter. Go.
I think, you know, I have fantasies all the time about if I wasn't in this job, what I would be like on Twitter. I think it would be reckless.
I think they call those burner accounts.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I don't. I can't risk it. I'm too much of a coward to the flipping back and forth. Could you imagine? No, thank you.
Kevin Durant situation.
I already have enough stress in my life. You know, I don't need to have the added stress of potentially having my burner account leaked. So.
Right.
The pitching, I made this little case right before you came on of how all of a sudden the starting pitching is actually the strength, which is bad, which is not a great thing. And yes, Matz has been a positive story, and Robbie Ray looks good, and we'll see how that translates over the course of a season, and maybe Pearson's going to come back in the next like 2-3 weeks, most optimistically, I would say 3. But the pitching is in a bad way right now. You're going to see guys that I mentioned who should be pitching once every 4 days in low leverage spots, be pitching once every 2 days in high leverage spots. And that's not a good thing. So for me, feelings need to go out the window. And I get that that matters, right? Bo Bichette getting his chances at shortstop, that matters. And he can get better. And I think it was Nick Dica, who plays for the Arkells and is a really good baseball follow. He brought it up on Twitter the other day. It's a fair point, which is that no one thought Semien could play shortstop, and then he developed and became a good defensive shortstop. So I don't want to limit Bo, even though if I personally believe with my dumb eyes and zero credit for evaluating baseball players properly, doesn't think it's going to happen for him, because I just don't see... I don't see what's going to make him special at that spot defensively. If the Blue Jays want to win these games, especially now since the Red Sox look way more than competent, and I know it's a hot start and you don't want to overreact to things, but you're in there now with the Yankees, Rays, and Red Sox. And if you really want to make the playoffs this year or be competitive and not just lose out of the gate to teams like the Royals, then you keep Vladdy at first. That's fine. You shift Semien to second. You put Bo at third, and you leave Cavan at second.
Semien at short.
Yeah, I knew. I screwed up somewhere. That's the infield. That's the infield that gives you the best defense. You still don't even have above average defense there. You're still asking guys to do weird things, but at least I kind of feel as though now it's going to be run prevention rather than what you saw yesterday, which is this team cannot afford to have defensive breakdowns with this pitching staff. You can't ask Tanner Roark to go out there. You can't ask Anthony Kay to be pitching and not give him good defense behind him. Otherwise you're going to be in that spot where you need 8 runs to win a ball game.
Yeah. Okay. So let me be the other guy on Twitter. So, yeah. And I hear you, and I've played devil's advocate with you a number of times sometimes when we talk. So I get what you're saying, but now you're going to Bo Bichette, who is indisputably one of the two or three most important players in this franchise, right? Going forward, long-term. And you're saying, can you go play a position you've never played before? That's hard. Like, that is not.
And then
not.
He says yes, because I'm a badass and I want to win.
Maybe.
And I'm more than a haircut.
Yeah, maybe he does. It's funny. Whenever I think of Bo moving off short, I think of him going to second. If he's going to move, I think of him going to second. And I know I'm a broken record on this when I say they're not a finished product. You can be a contender without being like a fully formed team. This is not a fully formed team. No, they're still learning about. Pardon me?
They're getting an infielder at some
they're
point.
Getting an in, they're getting yeah. an infielder. Yeah, maybe not this year, but in the offseason, they're getting an infielder. So I agree, because they're still learning about Bo. They're still learning about Biggio. They're still learning about Rowdy Tellez at the plate. They're still learning about a lot of different guys. And I think this coming offseason is going to be the, okay, now let's make the Death Star operational kind of offseason, if you know what I mean. That's when they're going to try to tie up all the loose ends. It was impossible. It was always impossible for them to try to figure everything out this offseason, because some of the players are still so young. They didn't want to rush to judgment and make a bad choice, so they wanted to give them one more year. And this is a funny year because the expectations are sky high, and there are certain reasons, valid reasons, that the expectations are sky high, but there are still some parts of this team that are not fully into their final stage. They are still evolving. So, you know, the Bo at third thing, I don't know. Semien can obviously play short. We know Biggio is fine at second base. We saw that last year. But to go to Bo and say, hey, can you be a third baseman starting Tuesday? That's a big, big ask on a number of levels. And I think they're going to err on the side of making little changes before they make that sizable change. And it could be something as small as, They've got off days Monday, Thursday, each of the next 2 weeks. Maybe they can drop a pitcher. Maybe Espinal comes back up, and maybe Espinal plays a couple days a week at third, and Panic gets a spot start. You know what I mean? And then it's and then Biggio is not all of the pressure of third base 7 days a week is on Biggio. I don't know what they're going to do. I think they have to think about it. But again, it's only been 13 games, like 13 games out of 162. And it's the beautiful thing about baseball is they play every day and they give us so much to talk about. But 13 games is the blink of an eye in a season. I'm not saying they shouldn't consider it. I'm just saying to make a move that big, to ask one of your most important players to move to a position he's never played before in the middle of a season, that seems like a lot.
Oh, I would like to put on record that I do not want to be held accountable for any of my takes on here. Okay, that's not. I just want to be known.
Life work that way. Yeah. Whatever I say, just disregard it. Yeah.
So, yeah, but no. When it comes to baseball, especially, I understand that there's just segments of the season where. Okay, so takes I've already had. DFA Rowdy, like just get like let go of Rowdy. There's no point. Let anybody else take those ABs. Kirk is the starting catcher. I still actually kind of think he should be the starting catcher, but like we've already done these massive sweeping changes to this team. And I know it's ridiculous and I know it's a baseball season. I just think it's more fun to speak this way rather because baseball's so hard, right? If I do the thing where, well, it's a sample size sport, everybody knows that, everybody understands that. And if I do that, then it kind of paralyzes you for what you get to talk about. And
yep.
So when it comes to defense stuff, this is my only thing when it comes to why I don't think it's as crazy as some of the other, you know, hot takes or reactionary takes that I'll give with the baseball stuff. Bo is not going to be a shortstop in the long term. I don't think so anyways. There are already rumors about how they're going to be interested in Trevor Story. They certainly already looked at Lindor. This team believes he's going to move off eventually. So why not do it now? I just don't know why it's this whole thing where here's what I know about Bo Bichette. He's a proud guy who wants to play shortstop, and I love that about him. But I also think he's a winner. And if this front office and if this is the managerial staff and this is the team that they're going to try to win with, I would just be saying, why are we not getting in the reps? Why are we not putting the best effort forward? Why are we not putting the best team forward? You're right. It's not a guarantee. People say stuff like I do where you go, you put him at third base. Yeah, he's got to learn a new position. It's going to be hard. There's going to be mistakes that are made there. Look at Vlad's transition over to first base. We know he can be an elite first baseman, but how many times last year did he make that mistake of coming off the bag where he was making some super aggressive diving play thinking he was just an inverted third baseman and going, dude, that's not the position. You need to think about it differently. There's going to be errors. There's going to be mistakes. Just for the long-term health of the franchise, if you believe this is going to be the case anyways, if they think Bo is going to be the shortstop, then fine. If they think Kevin Biggio is going to be a part of the infield, fine. But the awkward parts are, I don't think Bo is a shortstop, and I also don't think Kevin Biggio has a long-term future in the infield or even as a youth. Maybe he does this odd spot start when this team needs to win in the infield, but if he's going to be a Blue Jay long-term, I kind of believe it's in the outfield or straight up, he's kind of the odd puzzle piece that if they need to get pitching or make a trade, that he's just sort of the odd man out that doesn't really fit, even though he is a utility guy that you end up involving in a trade, ideally.
He could be. All of those things could happen. He could be a super utility guy who plays five different positions and starts, you know, 110 times a year, right? And you just, wherever you have a hole, you plug him in. And that's a hard job, but it doesn't come with the pressure of being an everyday guy at a certain position, like he might be feeling now. I think if I had to bet, I think I agree with you. I think eventually Bo Bichette is not the Blue Jay shortstop. Again, I've always thought of second base more than third base, but it could be third base. But I think they believe they owe it to him because of how important he is to prove that he can't do it rather than them saying this early, 84 games into his career, we don't think you can do it. And I also think they feel they owe it to him to only ask him to move if they get a Lindor, which didn't happen, or a Story, or a Simmons, or a Seager, or a Baez, or whatever. You know, you know what I'm saying. Because then they can say to him, Bo, look at how good this makes the team. And Bo can say, yes, I understand, and I will do it. So I think they owe it to him, and I'm not sure that's the worst idea, to owe it to him, to be honest with you, because, again, he's incredibly important. So, you know, it's one thing to say, well, look at how the defensive run saved would change, and it's another thing to say, these are living, breathing organisms. This is a culture and a community and a team, and this kind of, you know, a bit of the human touch here behind the scenes matters as well. And that's the balance that I try to keep in mind. So, but I promise you this, you and I will talk in February of next year, and we will, I believe, we will talk about the moves they made in the offseason, and everything will look like, man, that piece of the puzzle looks perfect, and that was so smart that they did that, and this guy fits in perfectly, because I think next winter is the winter where they can do that. I think they had too many unknowns going into this season, too many guys they wanted to evaluate. What if they gave up on Rowdy Tellez in the winter and they traded him, and 3 years from now he turned into David Ortiz somewhere? You know what I mean? Like, we don't know. I think they want to give him one more year, give Bo one more year at short, give Biggio one more year to see what his bat is like. You know, does he hit like he did last year, or is there some regression? Gurriel, Teoscar, all of them. Like, they're not, very few of these guys, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, very few of these guys, in my mind, are absolute locks of, hey, we know what this guy is going to be. I think we know what Bo's going to be offensively, but they're still learning about him defensively. So my guess is it might be a little more of a puzzle, a little Panic, a little Espinal, maybe a little Vladdy, some Biggio. But again, I don't want to overreact too much to one game, but it's if this team is going to win a championship, they have to be much better defensively than they are right now. And it's not just third base. Like, I know Gurriel was a Gold Glove finalist last year, and I know he's got a great outfield arm. He does not, a lot of the time, he does not take good routes or routes to the ball. He did that once last night. He also dove for a ball he had no chance at last night and turned a double into a triple. So it's not just third base. You know, there are a number of positions where they have to get better. You know, Springer coming back will help. Vladdy getting better helps. Simeon being on the team helps. But they're still a below-average defensive team. And that kind of thing will that'll catch up to you. They've got to get better, and they know they've got to get better. I just don't know that they can do it all this year.
You're right. And, you know, sports are opinions, but this is the correct takes, all of them. It's 13 games. They need to have a human touch. I've spent basically the last 2 weeks stumping for the Nick Foligno trade before it happened and after it happened, because hockey players are human beings, and I've said it over and over and over again, but when we see this Amazon series about how this Leafs team gets along and the vibe of the dressing room with guys like Joe Thornton and bringing in a guy like Nick Foligno, it's going to change the way that I think a lot of younger fans who are very, very data-driven when it comes to watching hockey are going to perceive the sport, because it's just, it's going to be a different access point to it. And yeah, Bo matters, and making sure that Bo gets an opportunity matters, and making sure that you collect this, yeah, more of a sample, more data on whether he can do it and you're doing it in the right way. Of course, all of these things, this is the correct take. It's just, when you watch it, you keep thinking exactly the end result, which is two things. One, these guys are, the two star players of the team are 22 and 23 years old. So you actually have time, even though it feels urgent because they spent money this offseason. And they have Ryu and they have Springer, and those are bigger wild cards when it comes to money. So you'd like to win. But ultimately, those two guys, Vlad and Bo, matter more than anything else. And they are your best chance at not just winning one World Series, but at multiple World Series. So, yeah, the urgency sometimes that we feel is not as urgent when you think about that perspective. It's just, yes, eventually, to my estimation, and I believe to yours, the defense has to improve, and that's going to start with the infield, and it's going to start with multiple pieces moving around. And honestly, like, I could see a scenario where the only thing a year from now that's similar is that Vlad is at first, and that the other three things are completely different. That's very much
so
on the table.
Think of that. If I had said to you on September 25th of last year that the one guy who's most likely to stay and be a success at his infield position is Vlad, you'd have said to Danielle, disconnect him. This is clearly not Dan Schulman. Get this guy off the radio. So, like,
when you disconnect him, make sure that you get his number, because I want to be his voice agent, and we're going to make so much cake.
but it's a huge, not just third base. Overall team defense to me is hugely important. Yep. And it's got to get better. But if you try to do something to fix next week, you might harm next year. And that's what I have to think about. And another aspect of the whole culture and community and all that stuff is Biggio's a very important part of the group, right? I mean, it's the three amigos. And in some ways, you know, he's the elder statesman of the three. And he matters. He matters in that clubhouse. Now, you can't make every decision just based on that. Because you got to win between the white lines, but there are a lot of things to consider, and I wish there had been that perfect third base type guy, whether it was free agency or trade. Like, I always wondered in the winter, Kyle Seager's in the last year of his contract with Seattle, left-handed batter, third baseman. I mean, he's not Scott Rolen at third, but he's a major league third baseman, and he can hit. And Seattle didn't look like a contender, and was there a possibility of a trade there? You know, then you plug that hole and Biggio can stay at second or be a super utility guy, but it didn't happen. So, you know, and we don't know why it didn't happen, but listen, we know now they're exploring everything, right? Whether it's internal or external, and they'll continue to do so. You know, short term, I think an even bigger issue is their pitching staff is so beat up right now, especially the bullpen, obviously. They got to find a way to stay above water the next couple of weeks. I don't know when these guys are coming. I don't know what ulnar neuritis is. I don't know how serious that
is
for Romano.
It's elbow inflammation, which
it's an elbow thing, right? It's right.
It's
an
elbow inflammation, so it's bad.
Right, right. So I know the word ulnar means. I know where the ulnar nerve and the ulnar ligament are.
R.A. Dickey all taught us who the ulnar is.
Right, right.
That's we all learned from him.
But Merriweather, oblique, 10 days, 2 months. I have no idea. Stripling, I have no idea. Pearson, I have no idea. Like, it's a good thing they built up their depth because they've used up just about all of it right now. And again, the good news is they've got 4 off days in the next 2 weeks. They're going to go down to a 4-man rotation for sure, which will make things a little bit easier and may help in other areas too.